WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today on Keeping the Faith with Mike Conklin, a reporter for 35 years with the Chicago Tribune, and for the last 5 years, a teacher of journalism at DePaul University College of Communication. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're talking with Mike by phone from his home in Chicago, and I want to thank you for cutting short your bike ride this afternoon to be able to be on the radio with us.
Actually, I didn't cut it short. I got it in this morning. I just started earlier.
Uh-huh. And one of your loves is riding bikes around the city of Chicago and elsewhere. How did you first discover you loved riding bicycles?
That's an interesting question. I actually did it as a family event. I had the usual young teenagers, children, and we were looking for something to do one summer, and I grew up in Iowa where they have this great bicycle ride across Iowa, and my wife...
Sponsored by a newspaper.
Yeah, and my wife at the last minute said, let's take the kids on this bicycle ride. So we were very ill-prepared, but we had a great experience. And I don't know if it's like about a 500-mile ride, and it goes for 7 days. And we were in way over our heads. But just the fact we accomplished it made us feel so good that we went back and we continued doing it. And then just branched out from there. I've, biked all over the country and stuff. So, it's a great pastime, I think.
Today we're talking with Mike about a reporter's view of Chicago, and you are the founder or co-founder of the Chicago Urban Bicycle Association, which I notice has the acronym CUBS, C-U-B-S. Does that also show your baseball affiliation?
Well, no, it actually doesn't, because it's funny because we were just riding today with my wife, and we had our Cubs jerseys on, and it says, Chicago Urban Bicycle Society, and some guy yelled, "Hey, you'd have something for the Sox," and we tried to explain to him, but he was long gone. And, that's a group of us that I sort of fell into, and I did this bike ride across Iowa like 15 times, and about the third one, we organized this club in Chicago to do it, and there's about 75 of us, and there's like 12,000 people that do the ride, and we are a group that decided to do it ourselves, and then, we would hire staff to come with us, hire students to take care of our luggage and move it and all that. And then we raised a lot of charity money. We got so organized that we were having banquets on this trip. We would pick out one night where we would rent a place and raise money with an auction, and we adopted this thing called Camp Courageous in Iowa, which is a summer camp for kids with disabilities, and we actually raised close to $100,000 for them over the years and everything. So it became a lot of fun.
Now, you also teach a course there at DePaul on Discover Chicago. So you not only ride bikes around Chicago, and you've reported on Chicago for all these decades, but you're now teaching students how to learn about a city.
I sort of fell into that. Ostensibly, I teach journalism and in the College of Communication, but we have all of these different initiatives at DePaul, and one of the really great ones is that every student has to take a course on the city of Chicago.
Wow.
A full course, not just like a couple days orientation or anything, and they have to do it in their first quarter, and they ask for professors from various disciplines to sort of customize a course that's got their subject matter or their discipline around a Chicago angle. In other words, like the music of Chicago, the theater of Chicago, the religion of Chicago, women's studies in Chicago. And I all those years I worked at the Tribune, I obviously became very familiar with the city of Chicago, wrote about it a lot, and I quickly raised my hand to be one of our representatives from the College of Communication, and I've been teaching courses on the Loop, the Chicago Loop, and history and where we got to where we are, and so that's been like kind of a labor of love, really. I mean, outside my normal purview, but.
Well, I might just let listeners know that I was privileged to be with a small group where you led some of us on a tour of the Chicago Tribune facilities there, the Chicago Tribune Tower there by the river on Michigan Avenue, and also of DePaul, and appreciated a great deal. And I thought I'd let our listeners hear some of your insights and maybe some of your stories about the city. But let me get some terms clear.
Sure.
I called this a reporter's view of Chicago, but should I be calling you a journalist? Does it make journalists unhappy to be called a reporter?
No, not at all. In fact, I stress that with my students because when I get them at the sort of introductory level, they all say they all want to be journalists because they like to write. And I keep telling them it's not about writing; it's about reporting. You know, and if you can't be a good reporter, you really have nothing to write. And so that's always like square one, or a reporter. And by golly, I'm proud of it. But you've got to be a reporter; or you can't be a journalist. I mean, you know, it may manifest itself in different ways, like. You may end up writing headlines or you may be editing copy, but the bottom line is, you know, you're always looking at something new and translating it for the general public. And to me, that makes you a reporter for the most part. And that's all I've ever been. If you could take it a step farther, I'd probably say a storyteller might be actually a better way to describe it, perhaps. But that's a reporter.
And let's let listeners know what type of reporting you've done over the years at the Tribune before you started your stint as a professor. You started off with sports, is that right?
Yeah, well, actually, when I came to the Tribune in 1969, right after I got out of college, and I was fortunate because those were the days when, you know, they were really hiring younger people, and especially at the Tribune, because they were trying to remake the image from its sort of very conservative Colonel McCormick days, and they were hiring a lot of young people. That was their way to do it. And I kind of walked in the door there when they had about a 2 or 3 year, opening like that. And I started out in those days. Everybody started out as a general assignment reporter, and you were assigned certain suburbs that you had to cover. And I did that for about a year. Then I went to sports.
Okay.
And then I was in sports for, 20, almost a little over 20 years, doing a variety of beats, including covering the University of Illinois, I might add, for a couple of years in the back in the 80s when went to the Rose Bowl and Lou Henson was coaching and Mike White and all that good stuff. But the thing is, you're able to sort of move around and never leave. And so I had different beats in sports, college sports, and I covered the hockey. But I started out covering high school sports and a lot of things around town. And then that sort of morphed into me writing a column for about 7 years, a notes column on sports. And I did that. In sports, and then in the covered some Winter Olympics and Final Fours and all that kind of stuff. And then after that, I went to write a general news column that was sort of like the one I did in sports called Inc. And I co-authored that for 5 years.
That's INC, period.
INC, period, right. And then I became a general assignment feature writer for a section for about 7 years, and then I left and went to DePaul. So really, you know, I caught the kind of the glory, fading glory years of newspaper industry the way it used to be, sort of, I think, you know, got to do a lot of great stuff. And clearly, you know, the majority of my time was spent in Chicago sort of unearthing stories and, you know, whether it was sports or news or, you know, education or whatever.
Since this program is heard from Chicago South, here in Illinois and in Indiana as well, let me give listeners who may have questions about the city or about your job as a reporter learning about the city, they can call in. This is a live program, and we're eager to have listeners join the conversation. If it's a local call from the Champaign-Urbana area where WILL studios are, punch in 333-9455. If you're outside the 217 area code, if it's a long-distance call, use 1-800-222-9455. And our engineer, Kyle Crow, will take your call and put you in line to be on the air with our guest today, Mike Conklin. Mike's last name is spelled C-O-N-K-L-I-N. Mike, before we get any farther, I did want to make one little tie to the last item on All Things Considered before we started today. Excuse me. they had a segment on a movie about gospel music that's just coming out, and they didn't mention my favorite gospel album, and I just have to say that Lisa Newstead and Gene Redpath did one back in the 90s called Angels Hovering Round, and it's a... I interviewed Gene Redpath on this show earlier, a year or so ago, and she referred to that as sort of blue-eyed gospel, and that is another part of gospel music history, and I just wanted to mention that in case listeners would want to look up Angels Hovering Round. But getting back to A Reporter's View of Chicago, I read in one of the DePaul articles about you that you tell your students that their job is talking to people. And that's what you obviously have done over all these years, and you still are as a teacher. But the reporter really has to listen.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's two sides to that talking, of course. You know, you're right.
Oops, are we still there?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. So what are your practices of listening? How do you get, first of all, how do you get somebody you're talking to open up and to tell you things that they haven't told somebody else to make this a new slant or angle?
I think, you know, based on a lot of the stuff that that I used to cover, the problem was never getting people to open up. It was sort of distinguishing the people who had something to say those that that didn't. And when I was doing the ink column, for instance, I mean, I would get every day there would be maybe 40 or 50 people making some pitch, you know, where they wanted me to interview someone because they were basically selling a product. So
sure.
There's a lot of that that goes on. Now, on the other hand, there's the usual go out and cover a tornado and interview the mother who just lost her son and, you know, that sort of stuff too. And, you know, it's not... For one thing, I don't want to say you can't be a shy person, because I do think of myself as being a little bit shy sometimes, but you just have to sort of develop these sort of, sort of interviewing skills, I think, after a while. I had the greatest training of all. My father was a small-town barber, and I always tell people the only difference between my dad and I was that he had to stand on his feet and converse all day with people. I get to sit down, you know, and converse with people, plus the telephone, too, of course. But... And a lot of it is just sort of the trick is knowing a lot about the person you're going to interview, you know, or that you're going to converse with. And sometimes they don't tell you anything, you know, and sometimes it's not worth using. And maybe one of the hardest things for someone as a reporter is to interview a lot of people and kind of figure out that really doesn't fit the story, you know.
Oh.
And so you have to become kind of a discerning listener, I guess. But the key to everything is knowing that much about the person in advance, I think.
Now, when you started in reporting in Chicago and traveling around the state of Illinois, people have a lot of strange ideas about Chicago. Of course,
right.
If you travel abroad, all people know is Al Capone and things like that.
Supplanted by Michael Jordan a little later.
Right. But there's in recent years, the sort of first line you hear if you say you're from Illinois or Chicago is corruption. When did you first encounter corruption as a reporter?
I actually first encountered corruption as a reporter working at the Chicago Tribune firsthand. When I first moved to Chicago, within a month or so, someone told me about city vehicle stickers that you had to have for your car. I wasn't aware how that worked, so I went over to the courthouse, and the clerk I was talking to, not knowing that I was a reporter, told me that, you know, here's what you have to do, but he said you just missed the deadline by 2 days, so you're going to have to pay more, you know, for this vehicle sticker. But he said, if I post-date it, he said, and you give me a few extra dollars, he said, I'd be glad to do that, you know. So it's like, you know.
Saves you money and makes him some money. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And, this is going to be a different, this is going to be different living in Chicago. I don't know that... that's the first time I really, you know, encountered it, perhaps, you know, from a personal standpoint. But from a repertorial standpoint, you know, it's always on the fringe. I mean, no matter what you do, I mean, and it sort of comes down to what you define as corruption. I mean, scamming. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of corruption. There's corruption within charities. There's There's corruption within government, which is, you know, obviously the most popular thing we know about. You know, there's corruption within the justice system. There's corruption within religion. I mean, you know, so, and I know in Chicago, you know, the first thing is everybody wants to say, you know, government, of course, and, you know, and that's something that I've written a little bit about over the years, and mainly I've dealt with it from the standpoint of writing about the people that are involved, you know, the repercussions, that sort of thing, and left the justice part of it up, you know, the actual litigation and the arrests and all that sort of stuff up to the other reporters. There hasn't been that often that I've really been in a frontline position where I was actually reporting directly on it, you know, as I was always catching the second wave of it, I guess you could say.
From the days of the Chicago Fire, reporters have loved focusing on the characters.
Sure.
In Chicago. I remember the humor writer George Ade from Chicago back
sure.
in the early 1900s.
Ross Ade Stadium.
Yeah, just and just.
Actually, that's Ade is. I think he was a Purdue guy, and that's Ross Ade Stadium is named for him at Purdue.
Well, his humor is wonderful if you can still find it.
Yeah.
It's collected in books, but he just loved the characters, the personalities.
Yeah.
Who are some of the people that stand out over your 35 years as a reporter of just fascinating people to talk to and to pass on to your readers?
Well, I was lucky because I got to interview just about everybody at one time. I had all these great experiences and there were great characters within the industry too, of course. I mean, I had several columnists that I worked with that became kind of legendary figures like John Carmichael and Dave Condon and Mike Royko and people like that. I mean, so I got that side of it, but I've always been the other way around. I've always thought that journalists should be, you know, I would say seen and not heard, but they should be read and not heard, you know, in that they're really the translators. But there's no getting away within the Chicago journalism world. There are a lot of great characters. And, in fact, if you go way, way back before I was, you know, you and I were around, Steve, but, you know, you get the Ben Hecht and all the great film writers of the 1920s and 30s. A lot of them were ex-Chicago newspaper people. They used that as kind of a, you know, these sort of chronicling of colorful characters, you know, and they used that to become screenwriters. So there's that part of it. And when I was, like I said, when I was working, you know, the Mike Rykos and the Dave Condons.
Condon wrote the In the Wake of the News.
Right, yeah, Dave Condon.
Yeah, he was on the sports page, yeah.
Yeah, he was a real legendary guy. And, you know, and quite frankly, you know, I think sometimes people within the industry get a little puffed up and think that the whole world, you know, thinks of all these people too in the same way they do. And I mean, I go to my students and I say Mike Royko today, and, you know, very few kids know who I'm talking about, you know. And to me, to some of my old colleagues, that's totally unfathomable, you know.
Right,
you know.
Right.
But on the other hand, you know, if I go back and I'm 18, 19, 20 years old, you know, and someone were to pose that question to me when I was that age, you know, I probably couldn't name many people either that, you know, had were that much time had passed. On the other side of it, people that I've actually, like, interviewed and stuff, I mean, you know, Willie Mays, Will Chamberlain, Hillary Clinton, Henry Kissinger, I was fortunate that I got to be around a lot of people like that and, you know, interview them in some capacity or another, whether it was a short couple quick questions or spending some time with them, you know, or whatever the case may be. I feel like I had a lot of fun, you know, and it was a nice ride, there were a lot of them.
Politicians are known particularly for telling reporters only what they want to tell them regardless of the question. How do you get around that?
Well, you know, my own kids and my family think I'm the most cynical person in the world sometimes. they don't sit in the same room with me if I happen to be watching television news, which I don't generally do, because I like to point out all the, you know, the foibles and all that kind of stuff. And, the thing is, even the politicians know that what they're telling you, you know, for the most part, I mean, all you have to do is, like, for instance, I've covered several caucuses out in Iowa, and you'll follow someone around, and, you know, and they'll say the same thing all the time, of course. Now, they don't do that quite as much now because of, you know, the way
24-hour news. Yeah.
Right, and also the way communication works. I mean, you know, you can be waiting for Hillary Clinton to come to Iowa City to speak, and you can be watching her, waiting an hour in advance, and you can turn on your handheld and actually catch her in Cedar Rapids speaking,
sure.
And so you're aware of she's giving you the same thing, sort of, And so, the bottom line is that you when you go and you hear people say the same thing all the time, you start to look for what are they saying that's new, what are they saying that's advancing, or they're advancing beyond what they did before. And in many cases, anything they say doesn't fall in that category, then you don't really report it either. I mean, I've been to a lot of things where, nothing was said. We just went to be covered in case they did actually say something.
Right.
So, yeah.
We're talking Keeping the Faith this afternoon with Mike Conklin, C-O-N-K-L-I-N, a 35-year staff writer and columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and for the last 5 years, a teacher of journalism at DePaul University in the College of Communication there, where he takes students along with him now to the Iowa caucuses and teaches them on the job how to interview politicians. If you have a question for Mike or a comment on something he said, do give us a call, 333-9455 in the Champaign-Urbana listening area. Elsewhere, 1-800-222-9455. And that includes people who are listening online at will.illinois.edu/AM. This program is heard live that way by a computer. And our programs are archived at that same site. You can go there if you've missed part of this program or would like to hear earlier programs. That's will.illinois.edu/keepinthefaith. We'll get you there if you're looking for an archive program, or /AM if you want to hear it live. This is a program of Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM, and heard also at 90.9 FM HD3 if you have one of those wonderful HD radios. Well, getting back to Mike Conklin, we're talking about a reporter's view of Chicago. I mentioned the attitude people have of thinking of Chicago as only corrupt. What are some of the great things about the city that you observed over your 35 years?
Well, if you travel around very much to large cities, especially in the Midwest, you find that Chicago is pretty vibrant. I understand that when you go into the Loop and you see the Flowers and the Planters and Millennium Park and the lakefront and all that kind of stuff, that a lot of resources have been poured into that. And critics will tell you that if you get outside that loop, you find a lot of problems. You find some neighborhoods that aren't so good, and you find a lot of despair and infrastructure that doesn't measure up in lots of parts of the city. But you start with the fact, though, that I don't think anybody, can dispute that the downtown area, the Loop area of Chicago, when you put it up against just about every other major city in America, it's a great destination place. Our museums are fantastic, and I'm not one of those guys that like goes to London to the museum and then never goes to them here, because I do go to them here a lot. I think if a visitor comes to Chicago, I think the first absolute must place to go to if they're going to spend some time down there is one of the great institutions, is the Chicago Culture Center, which is on Washington and Michigan Avenue, which is the old Chicago Public Library. It was the central library from 1890s to about 20 years ago when they moved into the Harold Washington. And it's been remade into this culture center. And if you go there at any time of just about any lunchtime during the week, there's a speaker, there's a chamber group playing, there's a performer, or there's something going on there. There are tours that emanate from there.
And it's all free.
Yeah, yeah. And, there's a library there, there's computer accesses, there's a coffee shop, bookstore, gift shops, museums, everything. So, we've got some just fantastic institutions like that. The Art Institute, the museum campus has been one of the great developments. elements, I think, you know, where you've got the Shed and you've got the Adler and you've got the Field, and Soldier Field is there too, all on that peninsula out from the city. I mean, and Millennium Park has been a fantastic, you know, addition to the Loop area, and it, of course, was much criticized when it came in, but and
went over budget a bit.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. But, you know, probably the fact it's over budget, but probably will pay off for itself.
Oh, it has already, surely. Yeah,
yeah, you know, in time. And
before you leave the Chicago Culture Center, for those of us downstate who go to Chicago and park and ride the Metra Inn, it's literally right as you come up from underground, or as you walk off the Metra. It's a wonder, a great location.
Yeah, it's the IC state. And that's actually where a Chicago reporter got gunned down, Jake Lingle, once. Right on those steps, as you walk up those steps into the Culture Center.
That's not helping tourism, Mike, to
mention. No. but that was in the 1920s. So so that's like a, you know, that's like a great story. Okay, so those are a great part of it.
I remember reading that when Queen Elizabeth first visited Chicago, you know, she traveled around the world and mm-hmm. been on the Riviera in many places, but she said, "This is the most beautiful city I've ever seen." But she landed apparently at the old, what was the airport there on the...
Migs Field,
and it was just taken along the lake shore, and yeah. Never saw any of the rest of the city.
Well, it's funny because when I used to escort a lot of foreign visitors around when I was interviewing them, and I covered professional soccer in Chicago back in the early 70s, and they get all these soccer players from abroad, and they would come here, and I would get their impressions, you know, and the outsiders' view of Chicago, they forget about the coastline. You know, for the most part, they kind of forget that, and it sort of, you know, Midwesterners don't, but it sort of surprises you when you come here, you know, and you see this spectacular, you know, shoreline that we have, which is thanks to the Daniel Burnham plan of, you know, the early 1900s. I mean, it's protected, and I always tell my students, you know, we had the Burnham plan, which allows no commercial, you know, exploitation of the lakefront. You know, you go all the way from top of Chicago to the south of it, and, you know, there's this, I mean, you know, there's certain things that have to be away from it, and, you know, it protects it, you know. And I always tell them, without that, we're Cleveland, you know.
Uh-huh.
And you know, and one year in a class, I had a kid raise his hand, he was from Cleveland, you know, objected to that. But he agreed, you know. And so that lakefront always sneaks up on people, I think, you know. That it's something about being in the Midwest and looking out over a body of water and not being able to see the other side, you know, is kind of a startling thing in some cases. And then if you go up and down Lakeshore Drive, either north or south, I mean, you know, you've got spectacular lakefront, parks, greenery, you know, golf courses, and then, the requisite high-rises just off that, you know. So it's really a spectacular part. But there are a lot of sections of Chicago, you know, that have become gentrified, and, of course, that's another subject, I guess, but that have really improved a lot. I mean, when I first moved to Chicago, the area around Wrigley Field was a bad area. I mean, you just really had to be careful, you know, when you went there. You know, now it's like Yuppieville. You know, now whether that's an improvement or not, some people might want to argue.
Right.
But the simple fact is that it is much more attractive than it ever used to be to visitors.
Sure.
Know? And so, and then there are many neighborhoods in Chicago where that's taken place. You know, Ukraine Village and, you know, a lot of neighborhoods on the near west side and everything. And the South Loop of Chicago has really gotten good. I mean, this would be something that people in Champaign maybe aren't aware of, but if you go into the South Loop of Chicago right now, there are about 60,000 students attending either DePaul's expanded campus in the South Loop, and I'm talking right around Congress and State Street, or Roosevelt University, or Columbia College, or Robert Morse. And if you toss in UIC, which is just like about, you know, maybe 10 blocks to the west of that area, you've got close to 65,000-70,000 students right in the South Loop. It's like a huge campus now. And as a result of that, it's become completely revitalized, the South Loop. So that's another really neat part, you know, a nice, you know, good thing about Chicago that's changed since I've been there, I think, that makes it much more attractive.
I want to get back to talking about some of the Chicago neighborhoods in just a moment, but we're about halfway through our program today talking with Mike Conklin, C-O-N-K-L-I-N, who teaches journalism at DePaul, and among other things, feature writing, advanced reporting, discovering Chicago. And we're talking with him about a reporter's view of Chicago based on his 5 years of teaching, but before that, 35 years of being a reporter for the Chicago Tribune, a columnist, and a staff writer. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this Keeping the Faith program, although last week when I was traveling, Don Nolan sat in this chair and had a great interview, and want to thank him again for doing that. Next week on Keeping the Faith, we'll be talking with Joel Shoemaker, a recently retired young adult literature librarian from Iowa. Also, we're talking to two Iowa people here in a row. He'll be talking about finding yourself in young adult literature. And for those who don't know, young adult for librarians is a category that includes what we might call middle school or junior high, young high school age. So there's a whole genre, a whole area of people who have written wonderful books for that age, and many of us who are older enjoy reading some of those books too. But we'll be talking, that's June 12th, about finding yourself in young adult literature. On June 19th, our guest will be Professor Eric Freifogel from the School of Law here at the University of Illinois about law and the environment. On June 26th, Mark Johnson, who's the executive director for the Fellowship of Reconciliation for the United States, the oldest interfaith peace organization in the country. We'll be talking about the question, is there a fear of peace that's spread around the globe? Those are some of the programs up ahead here on Keeping the Faith. Do tune in from 5 to 6. It's a live program, and we welcome callers to give us a buzz here and be on the air. You can call us at 333-9455 in the Champaign-Urbana area, and elsewhere 1-800-222-9455. Well, let's get back to Mike Conklin. Mike, we're talking about a reporter's view of Chicago, and Chicago is like some other cities with some very distinctive neighborhoods with their own histories and ethnicity and wonderful foods. And tell us about some of them.
Well, you know, I think probably, you know, probably my favorite is Chinatown, but I mean, and we have a, you know, fairly vibrant old Chinatown in Chicago on the south side. And, you know, I always love going there because it's one of those neighborhoods where you go and you can kind of almost, if you narrow your vision just a little bit, you can almost imagine that you're in another country, you know. And to me, that's kind of the big test of an ethnic neighborhood. And I like it a lot for that reason. And there are, you know, there are not just the restaurants, but, I mean, there are gift shops and bookstores and stuff like that. Having spent a little time in China, I'm kind of partial to it. But if someone really wanted to venture out when they come here and they come from a different area, I would really recommend they go to what we call the Devon Avenue area, which is up in Rogers Park.
D-E-V-O-N.
D-E-V-O-N. Now, Devon Avenue from about Western Avenue to Kedzie, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it goes for about 6 or 7 blocks. And it's like South Asia. It's an unbelievable eclectic mix of nationalities that on the world front don't seem to be getting along very well. But it's a combination of Muslims and Jews. Originally, it was like a very Jewish neighborhood in there, and it's still a lot of leftover, you know, Jews who still live in the area. And there are a lot of Pakistanis and Iranians and you know, people from South Asia all living in that area, and there's also a lot of Indians too, at the same time. So you have Indians and you have Pakistanis all living in there. In fact, right after 9/11, that was the first spot I went to when they gave us the charge to just go out and start talking to people, you know. And you would go up and down that area in Devon Avenue. And I mean, you know, if you're ever in the market for a sari, you know, that's the place to go. If you want your curry or you want, you know, anything, you know, it's a great area, Devon Avenue on the north side. So there's all these little things like that. I mean, Chinatown we know of Greektown, You know, there used to be, you know, some areas that were considered very German or very Polish, but a lot of that is, I mean, you'll still find restaurants and stuff, you know, that are kind of the old school places still there, but the neighborhoods themselves have changed. Either they've become gentrified or, quite frankly, they went south, you know, or in the toilet, I guess I could say, you know, whatever. And at the very least, there's a big transition. Now, the other thing is Pilsen, which is not too far from Chinatown. And Pilsen is the traditional landing spot for the new wave of immigrants, whoever they happen to be. And in the 1860s, 70s, that sort of thing, it was Irish. Irish were at the bottom of the barrel in Chicago. And a lot of people, you know, they find that hard to believe, but it's true. They came to dig the canal, and they all lived in the Pilsen area, which was close to where a lot of the canal work was being done. Later, it became a landing spot for Eastern Europeans, you know, the, you know, the sort of, the Czechs and the Albanians, everything there. And now it's hugely Latino-Hispanic, and it's been that way for the last, I don't know, you know, 40 years or so. So that's like if you go down, like, Halstead Street and you get down around 20th, 22nd, 23rd, down in there, that's kind of the heart of Pilsen, and it's very close to Chinatown. And, you know, all the Mexican restaurants, everything you want, you know, are right in that area. And so Pilsen is a great area.
Let's talk a little bit about the great African-American sections of Chicago. Of course, now it's spread out throughout the city, but Bronzeville and the Great South Side. And
Yeah, no, I mean, Bronzeville, which is basically, you know, kind of to the north of Hyde Park and the south of the South Loop, you know, kind of in south of the Michael Reese Hospital area. And it's interesting because in the last census, 2010, that was it's a very declining part of Chicago's population is African-American. I can't remember what the percentage was, but, you know, it was fairly significant, you know, and there are fewer African-Americans in Chicago, but mainly they're moving to the suburbs. And but Bronzeville was like one of the very first neighborhoods, and in fact it was, you know, we were, and, you know, many would say still are, one of the most segregated cities in America, and blacks were basically confined to an area, you know, they call it the greater kind of metropolis, down around State Street, Michigan Avenue, south of I-55 when you come in, and if you get in that portion of it, you start to see some of these big old churches, and you get down around the IIT, White Sox area. That was kind of the heart of the African-American, migration, the Great Migration, like 1920s, 1930s, 1940s, until, you know, they sort of, you know, African-Americans sort of busted out and then, you know, got into other neighborhoods of the city, and then you had the Great White Flight of the 50s where a lot of, you know, whites on the west side were moving to, you know, the Skokies and, you know, the Nileses and all those kinds of areas around here.
Naperville, yeah.
Yeah, right, yeah. And that area still is, you know, it's very historic, the Bronzeville area, and there are a lot of things down there to commemorate it. I mean, you know, restaurants and museums and historical societies, that sort of thing. And, I mean, there are all kinds of legendary stories. I mean, during the height of the great migration of blacks to the, you know, northern cities in the 20s and the teens and the 30s, there's a great story about Louis Armstrong arriving in Chicago at the old LaSalle Street station on the city of New Orleans, basically, you know, from New Orleans, and walking out of the train station with his horn and taking a cab down to a bar, you know, in Bronzeville, and playing that night on the day he arrived. It's, you know, so, I mean,
let's talk about the music of Chicago and the bars of Chicago. I know when I was a seminary student in Chicago in the late 60s.
Sure. You were in the heart of it.
There were amazing musical resources, and I went to Wheaton College on the west side, and we would go in, some of the students who liked jazz would come in and go and hear jazz on the south side in bars, and we weren't allowed to drink while we were at Wheaton in those years, anything alcoholic. And so there'd be this strange little group of people who were drinking Coca-Colas in these bars, hearing great jazz.
Yeah, yeah. Where did you go?
Pardon?
Where were some of the places you went to?
Oh, boy, in those years, I'm not sure I can remember the names. I remember hearing Sonny Stitt, though.
Yeah, yeah. There were a lot of that was in the loop. I mean, really in the loop. I mean, you know, there was like Tender Trap, and there were some trying to remember.
I think we were down around 47th Street, but I can't really remember.
Yeah, there's that part of it. In fact, the thing about the music is a lot of people don't understand the old Chess Records, which was down on, I think it was on South Michigan or South State, I can't remember. I mean, the Stones, the Rolling Stones, before they were famous, used to come here, you know. And, I mean, Chubby Checker and all those guys, you know, Fats Domino and stuff, they used to come up here and cut records all the time, you know. And at one time, the old Chess Records, which was down on the south side, not too far from the Daily Defender newspaper. And then on the north side, you had all, you know, you had a lot of blues that kind of made its way up there. I'm trying to think of the name of that blues guy right now that's got a clever guy, But, and then, you know, the Wise Fools Pub and some of those places up on 2350 Club, that sort of stuff, on Lincoln Avenue on the north side are, and then the Green Mill used to be a great spot up on Western, still is, north of Lawrence, which was a, you know, kind of a, you know, small cabaret type place where people, it actually got blown up in a movie called Thief with James Caan, but it was just all, you know, a hoax or whatever, but, yeah, no, I mean, and that stuff is still here, you know. Probably the great thing, if anyone wants to come here, Chicago Architecture Foundation on Michigan Avenue has these great tours of the city of Chicago that are very customized for that sort of thing, like the music of Chicago or whatever, you know. And they are a great starting spot for that, too, for discovering these places.
When I was in seminary, I had a summer job one time with the People's Gas Association or company. And we were out working on the streets, and we were given these laborers' jobs to let people, to give seminary students, many of whom came from middle-class backgrounds, an experience of what it would be like to work in a factory or in construction. And I happened to come from a blue-collar background, so that wasn't new to me, but I was still found an interesting program because we got to, at night, hear the, you know, personnel people from these companies talk, and We got to see what it was like, sort of at various levels, because they knew ministers would be serving churches where there would be a wide variety of people there. So this program was designed to help students learn this. But one of the things that we discovered was that the foreman over the crew that I was working with would let us go 15 minutes early. We couldn't leave the job site, but we could go to the nearest bar, which was always about half a block from wherever we were in the city of Chicago. Are there more bars in Chicago than most places?
I don't know, but, you know, Chicago has a very interesting ordinance up here. You can vote your precinct dry, huh, if you want. And you know, there are a lot of them, there's no question about that, but there's probably fewer than there used to be, but mainly because you've got some areas of the city that are almost a wasteland. I mean, there's got to be more packaged liquor stores than there ever were before, I'm sure of that. But one of the kind of quirky things about our ordinances up here are that if you take a voting precinct, a precinct has the ability to, if they get enough signatures, to put it on the ballot to vote their precinct dry. In other words, there can be no liquor licenses given out in that precinct. And
wow.
It's a great weapon that, you know, people can hold over a place that might become kind of a neighborhood nuisance.
A nuisance. Huh.
Yeah, and those are some of my favorite elections to go out and cover, were those sort of referendums. And, you know, actually one of my last elections that I covered for the Tribune, that was one of the things that was on a ballot out in a kind of a very residential, fairly upscale neighborhood on the northwest side, because they were some people that wanted to, you know, they wanted to vote it dry because, you know, there was a couple places there that people were upset with, that sort of thing, you know. And so even though there, you know, whether there are or not, I really couldn't document, I mean, more bars than before, but clearly there always have been, partly because Chicago is a great manufacturing city, but it used to be, but not so much for what we think of, the big Ford plant on the south side, stuff like that. There used to be a lot of small factories in the city of Chicago, and if you go all the way back, 1930s, 40s, 50s, there were neighborhood factories that made, you know, maybe they made widgets, you know, I mean, I don't even know what they made, but the simple fact is a lot of people would walk to work, and you would have all these little things that would build up around it, you know, I mean, you'd have the little grocery store, you'd have the little bar where guys would go for lunch or whatever, you know, and, you know, so there really were a lot of bars in Chicago at one time, but in the neighborhoods, too, especially.
Let me give the phone numbers again if people would like to ask a question to our guest, Mike Conklin. 333-9455 in the Champaign-Urbana listening area. Outside of that, 222-9455, and that's a 1-800 number. 1-800-222-9455. We'll get your question on the air. Mike, when you were talking earlier about sports, sports are so big in Chicago.
Yeah.
Of course, today the Cubs just lost 3 games in a row now to St. Louis. The Sox lost. What can you say about Chicago sports?
I'll tell you one thing, and I've got a riff on it. I've actually written this several times. I actually applaud the fact that the Cubs have not won the World Series since 1908. I mean, I think that's one of the truly great, outstanding runs in all of sports. If you start with the fact that no team in the history of America has waited longer to win a championship.
Let's stop there just for a minute. We've got a couple of callers waiting on line number 4, our toll-free line. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I have listened to a man from WGN Radio named Milton Rosenberg, who's a very brilliant in his knowledge and depth, but he went from a rather moderate open person to a kind of hyper-conservative. But I wondered if you could just give me your opinion or any knowledge you have about Milt Rosenberg. I know he exerts a wide swath in terms of listenership on WGN Radio, but could you just give
sure.
me what you know about him?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. Actually, I've been on his show several times, and he works out of Tribune Tower, and I've actually, I'm sure he doesn't know who I am. I mean, whatever, but I've been on his show and stood next to him in the lunch line in the Tribune Tower a number of times. I would agree with you. I used to love listening to his show quite a bit, but I always liked it when he got into subjects that you didn't normally get to hear about. You know, everything from wines to books to whatever. And I agree with you. I think he has sort of become kind of increasingly conservative, and I don't listen to it as much as I used to. And it's always a good way to find out who's on the University of Chicago faculty, because that seems to be about 50% of his guests.
Yes.
And that's fine. I like him best when he has authors of books, because I always like to read. I always like to hear authors, and I like to hear the stories of their books, and so it's kind of a cheap way to find out whether I want to buy the books or not, But, I would agree with you, with your viewpoint, that he's sort of, his island seems to have gotten a little smaller, and it's the same thing that columnists have all the time. You sort of kind of, the outside world starts to detect the rhythms of the show quite a bit, and it starts to become predictable.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to get some of the same guests just as you start to read the same sources and columns, that sort of thing. And the whole idea is to start staying a little more, a little fresher sometimes, I think,
I just would say he is probably one of the most brilliant people I've ever
heard. Oh, yeah,
known.
He's got
an encyclopedic knowledge of things, and he's an excellent interviewer, but I think that's right. I think that's what I have become a little disappointed with him.
Yeah, I think sometimes I'm not one of these that says change for change's sake, but sometimes you need to kind of do things a little bit different once in a while sometimes, I think, not just as an ode to the young people, kind of, which seems to be, kind of a prevalent thought, but you need to kind of change things up a little bit sometimes. I always tell my students, if you're a columnist, you need to be predictably unpredictable or unpredictably predictable, one of those things, and you run the risk of becoming predictable after a while, I think, and people start to identify your attitudes about things. And when they do that, then you're going to start end up preaching to the converted, because you're going to lose the people that are just tuning in for the objectivity and to learn something.
Thank you very much. Enjoying your program.
Yeah.
Appreciate the question. We have another caller on line number 1. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest, Mike Conklin.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good. Thank you.
I was wondering, thinking about moving up there, and do you think that city can be a comfortable place to live if you make a middle class or a lower middle class income?
Well, there's several factors. I mean, it depends on whether you have kids in school.
Oh, sure. No, I'm single.
Okay. All right. Well, then, because it's a tough sell if you have kids and they go to school and you live
sure.
in the city. I mean, I'm not saying that the schools are bad, all of them, and there are many, many ways to, go the public school route and get a perfectly fine education. The best test scores in Illinois are actually coming out of several schools in the Chicago public school system right now at Northside. Okay, all right, so we've eliminated that part. But, I mean, there are a lot of great neighborhoods, you know, the key to living here is you want to be close to public transportation. You know, you want to be close to a train, or you want to be close to an L, you know, because that just makes your world so much easier, because it is a tough city to drive in. It's a really tough city to drive in, I think.
Okay.
You know, I mean, that's the first thing I would do is, you know, make sure I'm close to, you know, close to some public transportation. It depends on, you know, where you got to go every day, that sort of thing.
Oh, I understand. Sure. And another question about your reporting. When you did sports, did you find that there were areas that you had to educate yourself in that maybe you didn't have a huge knowledge of and had to really pore over things?
The first tennis match I ever covered in my life was the U.S. Open in New York.
wow. That's plunging headlong into it.
The first skiing I ever wrote about in my life was at the Winter Olympics, you know.
Wow. And,
yeah, no, I mean, no question about it. But you know, when I was a reporter, people would say, well, you know, how can you be writing about this if you've never done it? You know, I mean, like, I used to get this from, like, hockey players when I covered the Blackhawks or whatever, you know. And I always say to them, well, I always think of it this way. I don't have to be in a car accident to know it's a bad thing, you know. I don't need to get hit in the head with a baseball to know that it hurts, you know. And my answer would always be, well, can you do what I do? You know, and I'm a translator. That's all I am, you know, as a reporter. So, you know, and to answer your question more directly, I covered a lot of things, and all I did was do my research, you know, find out as much as I possibly could. And I think to be a good reporter, you have to be a good reader, and you have to read a lot about the things that you're going to cover, you know. And when you do, you start to learn, you know, the nomenclature that comes with it. You know, you start to learn the words, the phrases, that sort of thing, and then you just, you know, the writing is the easiest part. It's the reporting.
Thank you for the call. We have a couple other callers waiting. Let's go now to line number 4. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. I'm a Chicago native. I grew up on the west side and came down to Champaign, and they said, well, what suburb? And I was always so proud to say, no, in the city, on the west side.
Yeah, yeah.
Our migration, at least with my parents, I had left for school in 69. 68, we could hear the gunfire from the riots after Martin Luther King died.
Sure.
So there was truly about 2 years an exodus of the entire
White flight, the Great White Flight.
Neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, for various reasons, and, you know, not all of them racist, a lot of it.
Sure.
You know, just worried about money values. But, a little gem that you know about probably, because that's how I got through 4 years of school. Even though I'm not the daughter of a Pullman porter, I got a Pullman scholarship, and I recently went back to the community of Pullman. What a neat area.
Yeah.
There's fourth generation people there.
Yeah.
These women that are about my age in their 60s, whose parents and grandparents worked for Pullman.
Yeah. Yeah.
A very kind of tiny little enclave surrounded by, I think, one side by the expressway and the other side by some tracks.
That's right.
Yeah, that hotel. I can't think of the name of that hotel right
Florence.
Now.
Florence.
Yeah, Florence. That place is what a gem that thing is. But.
Yes. Now, and one other thing that I, as your newspaper man, to talk about, I grew up not knowing how good I had it. But when I was little, I would read, you know, John Justin Smith and the Daily News.
Sure, sure.
And then Mike Royko.
Sure.
And, you know, and now I read the columnists, you know, nobody holds a candle to him.
Yeah, well, you
nobody.
Know.
Nobody.
He was so special
to me. I don't know. What did you feel as a writer?
Well, you know, I mean, you know, and I'm sure that when, you know, and I don't mean this to, like, you know, but I'm sure that people, when they first started reading Royko, they probably said he couldn't hold a candle to, you know, the people that were before him, sort of, too.
I suppose, yeah.
So, you know, and I think that always goes on. I mean, there's no question, though, but what, you know, what passes for columnizing, you know, is a lot different now, you know, than what it used to be, like
well,
a lot of other things.
Like maybe like a Studs Terkel for, like, for catching the flavor of a city.
Yeah. No, I know you're right.
Real neighborhood guy.
No, there isn't as much of that done, and there's also not as many newspapers. And
yes,
you had more to select from too, you know.
Yeah.
And the Daily News, you know, John Justin Smith and those guys over there, that was always known as a writer's newspaper. And
we're down to the last couple of minutes. I would like to get in one more call if we could. Line number 2. Yes, your question, please. Line number 2.
Okay, I came down to Chicago from the Stockyard area. And found that going back now, the only thing that I can really recognize is the cocoa factory up in Chicago downtown. When you go drive by it, you can gain 5 pounds smelling the cocoa. Did you Were you anywhere around when Minsky's was knocked down by the greatest stripper of them all, Chicago Wrecking Company?
Well,
I was in the 12th Street Theater when it was world's largest stores venue for Cat Stubby and the Buccaneers and a few other odd things like that. Had an uncle who was a chef at the Stockyard Inn.
Oh, yeah.
That was interesting.
Yeah, no, I ate there once.
He taught me how to cure meat so that it would taste better than this raw stuff that they sell at the grocery store now.
Yeah, broke my heart when they tore down the amphitheater, right across the street from that. That was always one of my, I always thought that was something they could have done something. That was one of the great institutions. I mean, a lot of stuff took place in that old amphitheater.
Yeah. I did two things there. I used to yearly stop at the principal's office and say, I won't be in school this week. I'll be at the amphitheater if you want me. And hadn't first day taking one of the cousins to see Roy Rogers and his rodeo.
Did you go to Tilden Tech? That was right down the street there. But
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
Well, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. We are out of time. We've enjoyed our conversation today with Mike Conklin, who teaches at the College of Communication at DePaul University in Chicago. Teaches feature writing, advanced reporting, and discovering Chicago. He's been there 5 years. Before that, for 35 years, staff writer and columnist at the Chicago Tribune. He's contributed also to the Encyclopedia of American Journalism and New York Times, History Magazine, The Reader, college textbooks, Spectrum Magazine, and many other places. We appreciate very much Mike Conklin being our guest today on Keeping the Faith. Next week, we'll be talking with Joel Shoemaker about finding yourself in young adult literature. That'll be June 12th on June 19. Our guest will be Professor Eric Freifogel from the School of Law here at the University of Illinois. He'll be talking about the law and its effect on the environment. Mark Johnson will be our guest on June 26 from 5 to 6 here on WILL. Mark is the executive director of the Fellowship of Reconciliation, the oldest interfaith peace organization in the United States. It is an international organization, and Mark's the director for the U.S. He'll be talking about the whole question of, is there a fear of peace that somehow keeps peace from being found in so many different parts of our world? And then on July 3rd, we'll be having an archive program with hearing again from Shirley Stillinger about the homeless mentally ill. We'll be replaying a program that we played last September. And that'll be on July 3rd. I'll be traveling that day and hearing some jazz in Iowa City, actually. I'll be gone, but we'll be playing that program here on July 3rd. I'm Steve Shoemaker, and thank you for listening again to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580.
From Amy Goodman to Chris Hedges, each week on Media Matters, Bob McChesney and his guests discuss the role and responsibility of media in our society. Join Bob for a two-hour Media Matters special, June 19th from 1 to 3, and pledge your financial support to the free and open discussion of ideas, Sunday, June 19th at 1.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.